A jury has been chosen for the trial of Milwaukee County Judge Hannah Dugan. That trial starts next week. It's Friday, December 12th, and this is Wisconsin Today Morning News. Good morning, I'm Alex Crow. Coming up on the show today, Wisconsin health officials continue to recommend all newborns be vaccinated against hepatitis B. And a look at what happened to Wisconsin's breweries during Prohibition. Stay with us.
What started with one experimental license more than 100 years ago is today Wisconsin Public Radio. With dozens of stations around the state, an app, and a comprehensive website at WPR.org. Thank you to our donors who made this journey possible.
Hey, it's Alex. Before we get to the news today, I want to take a moment to thank you for listening to Wisconsin Today Morning News. And you might not know this, but the largest piece of funding for the news you count on from WPR comes from listener contributions. You can help us close 2025 successfully by making a gift right now at WPR.org/donate. Thank you so much for supporting trustworthy news from WPR. Now let's get to the news. Jurors have been chosen in the trial against Milwaukee County Judge Hannah Dugan. Sarah Lear brings us this update on the case of the local judge who's accused of helping a man evade immigration and customs enforcement.
The Wisconsinite seated on the jury will decide whether or not Dugan is guilty of obstruction and impeding an official proceeding. Her legal troubles began in April when she led a man through a side door of her courtroom. That's after federal agents showed up at the Milwaukee County Courthouse to arrest the man for being in the country illegally. In doing so, federal prosecutors allege Dugan broke the law by trying to help the man evade immigration authorities. During the jury selection process on Thursday, attorneys for both sides grilled potential jurors about their ability to be impartial. That included questions about how they feel about the federal government, whether they trust law enforcement officers, and what news media they've already consumed about the case. The trial against Dugan begins Monday. Sarah Lear, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Wisconsin health officials say all newborns should be vaccinated against hepatitis B, despite a recent change from federal vaccine advisors. Last week, a committee advising the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention voted to recommend a birth dose of hepatitis B vaccine only if a mother tested positive for the virus or has an unknown status. But Dr. Ryan Westergaard from the State Department of Health Services says decades of science shows a universal vaccine recommendation is safe and effective and should continue to be covered by insurance.
The evidence hasn't changed, so the practice shouldn't change. There shouldn't be new barriers, as I mentioned, for vaccines getting paid for.
He says pediatric infections have declined by 99% since the birth dose was first recommended in the early 90s. Hepatitis B can damage the liver and lead to lifelong health problems for children, including liver failure or cancer. State lawmakers approved new teaching requirements for universities of Wisconsin faculty members yesterday. The plan came out of a requirement from the bipartisan budget deal struck this summer. Most UW faculty will have to teach at least 24 credits a year. Faculty at the research institutions of UW-Madison and UW-Milwaukee will have to teach at least 12. The plan was approved by Republicans in a legislative committee. Assembly Minority Leader Greta Neubauer, a Democrat from Racine, argued that Republicans are overstepping and micromanaging.
I am concerned about these strings on funding and managing of internal policy at the system. And I do think that this is another effort of the legislative majority to consolidate power.
Republicans argue the legislature's job is to oversee how public institutions use tax dollars. The committee also released $27 million aimed at retaining faculty in high-demand fields. As 2025 winds down, some big Wisconsin political stories are ratcheting up. They include two big court hearings, another candidate for governor, and a bunch of new laws and vetoes. WPR's Anya Van Wagtendonk and Rich Kramer joined Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson for this roundup.
Anya and Rich, we have two pretty big court cases with hearings scheduled for next week. One is being covered by our WPR colleague Sarah Lear. It involves the federal charges against Milwaukee County Judge Hannah Dugan. Rich, what's she charged with?
So she's the judge accused of helping a man in her courtroom avoid federal immigration agents who were waiting outside back in April. Prosecutors have charged her with concealing an individual and impeding an official proceeding. Her arrest made national news. Dugan says she's innocent, and her trial kicks off on Monday.
And the other case involves President Donald Trump's Wisconsin campaign lawyer from 2020. He has a hearing in Dane County Monday. Anya, who's Jim Troupas and what's he charged with?
Jim Troupas is an attorney and was briefly a Dane County judge, but now he is considered one of the architects of the 2020 false electors scheme. That is when Republican electors in swing states that Trump lost gathered and submitted paperwork saying that he had won their state. And that happened in Wisconsin. In fact, Wisconsin is considered the birthplace of that scheme. Troupas, as Trump's lawyer for the state, and Kenneth Chesbrough, a Wisconsin native who was advising the Trump campaign at the time, they exchanged messages about setting this whole thing up. And so they, along with a campaign aide named Mike Roman, have all been charged in Wisconsin with felony forgery.
And so then turning to the world of politics, just last week when former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes jumped into the race for Wisconsin governor, we talked about whether there'd be any more candidates who get in. We have a definitive answer to that question now with a new candidate. Rich, who's Joel Brennan?
He's a Democrat from Milwaukee who spent 3 years as Governor Tony Evers' Secretary of the Department of Administration. Brennan has also had a lot of business-related experience. He's the current president of the Greater Milwaukee Committee. Before he joined the Evers administration, he worked with the Redevelopment Authority of Milwaukee and Greater Milwaukee Convention and Visitors Bureau. Also, Brennan served as a staffer for former Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett when Barrett was in Congress.
And so, Rich, just to run through the Democratic primary candidates real quick, we have Mandela Barnes, we have current Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, Madison Senator Kel DeRoys, Madison Representative Francesca Hong, and former Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation CEO Missy Hughes, among others. How does Joel Brennan say he differentiates himself?
He says his experience as an executive for businesses, nonprofits, and the head of the Department of Administration is what sets him apart. Brennan has also referenced growing up with 10 siblings a bit in his campaign messaging. He told me that taught him how to, quote, elbow your way to the table in order to be heard.
And amidst all this legal wrangling and politicking, we also have governing taking place in Madison. Governor Tony Evers vetoed 9 bills last week. He signed a few dozen this week. Anya, we can't go through all of them, but can you give us a few highlights?
Yeah, a real mix of topics and themes. But among the vetoes was a bill that would have banned undocumented people from enrolling in Medicaid. That is obviously a big topic in Washington, but it is already illegal. And so Evers had some pretty forceful words in his veto message about legislation being used to score political points. And then he signed all kinds of bills into law, including tightening penalties for human trafficking and requiring schools to notify parents if a student has experienced alleged sexual misconduct at school. And then kind of in that same vein was the signing of Braden's Law. That is named for a teenager from Marathon County who died by suicide after he was targeted for what's known as sextortion. That's where a scammer solicits intimate photos and then threatens the person with their release. Under this new law, sextortion is now a felony. And there are no more scheduled session days this calendar year, so some things are quieting down at the Capitol. But at the same time, we are obviously heading into a competitive election year, so there's actually a good amount of bill introduction currently happening as everyone tries to score some good wins and photo ops for their campaigns.
That was WPR's Anya Van Wagtendonk and Rich Kramer. They spoke with WPR political editor Sean Johnson. Coming up, Wisconsin is known for its beer, but what happened during Prohibition? Stay with us.
Wisconsin Public Radio brings the state together. With reports from our 8 bureaus around the state, WPR is your connection to the pulse of Wisconsin. We are your source for in-depth news from Wisconsin, the U.S., and the world.
And finally, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCullum with a story about Prohibition.
Wisconsin is known for producing a lot of products, like cheese, milk, and beer. It's the state's history with the beer industry that made one listener wonder, what happened to Wisconsin's breweries during Prohibition? She reached out to WPR's Wisconsin to find out. Kelly Donovan has the answer.
When the 18th Amendment was passed in 1919, it prohibited the manufacturing, transportation, and sale of intoxicating beverages. But it did not make the possession or consumption of alcohol illegal. The purpose was to decrease the amount of drinking. According to PBS, by the 1850s, the average person in America drank about 7 gallons of alcohol a year. That's about 3 times more than Americans today. This culture of drinking continued up until Prohibition was enacted. Liz Shea of Cross Plains, Wisconsin, became curious about Prohibition after a visit to Potosi Brewing Company, founded in 1852. She couldn't shake her curiosity, so she reached out to Wisconsin to learn more about how breweries operated during the 1920s.
But I was surprised to hear that they actually shut down during Prohibition. They just sort of like switched to maybe like a similar product.
Potosi Brewery remained open during Prohibition and switched from producing beer to making non-alcoholic beer. They also started bottling milk that they made on the company's farm in Potosi. Ben Barbera is the director of collections and exhibitions at the Milwaukee County Historical Society. He says some breweries attempted to make what is called near beer. That's the product of making regular beer and then boiling the alcohol out of it.
But it wasn't a particularly successful product.
A lot of customers just didn't like the near beer. So in an effort to stay afloat and make some profit, Barbera says major breweries switched to making other, more profitable products like chocolate bars, chewing gum, processed cheese products, and even snowplows. Breweries also found ways to help customers access alcohol. Historian Jim Drager says some companies switched to malt products to make illegal home brewing possible.
It was not illegal to produce wort. Wort is the cooked down mash of grain that you add yeast to and turn it into alcohol. And it typically came with a caution that said, don't add yeast to this and don't put it in a 50-degree temperature space because it will produce alcohol and that's illegal.
Drager says prior to Prohibition, brewing was the 4th largest industry in Milwaukee. Thousands of people lost their jobs because of Prohibition. And Prohibition didn't just impact local jobs and the economy, but it impacted the culture of people who came to Wisconsin from European countries as well. John Harry is the executive director of the Portage County Historical Society. He argues that Prohibition was an ethnic war on immigrants, mainly from Germany, Ireland, Poland, and Italy. Saloons were regular hotspots for working-class men at the end of a long day and also a place to socialize.
So it wasn't just a party necessarily all the time. It was more of a communal thing that they would do.
Barbera of the Milwaukee County Historical Society says Yankees, who were typically of higher class and Protestant, began demonizing alcohol and viewed drinking as a habit of the lower class.
But, you know, the same people who wanted to limit immigration saw this as a vehicle for sort of enforcing Americanization, acculturation.
After the 21st Amendment ended federal prohibition in 1933, Wisconsin quickly worked to reinstate liquor laws so breweries could once again do what they do best, make beer.
Callie Donovan is a student at UW-Milwaukee and brought us that story on prohibition. And the story idea came from an audience question as part of the Wisconsin Project. Submit your question and we might answer it in a future story. Go to WPR.org/Wisconsin. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lola Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And of course, we'll end with a quick check of your forecast. Mostly cloudy today with highs in the teens and 20s. A little bit of light snow making its way eastwardly across the state today. A cold weather advisory kicks into effect for much of the state overnight with temperatures below zero. And that cold weather advisory is going to last all the way until Sunday. And that'll do it for this Friday. Thanks for joining us for Wisconsin Today Morning News. I'm your host, Alex Crow, and our producer today was Bridget Bowden. As always, have a great rest of your day and a fantastic weekend. We'll talk to you again soon.